Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to the Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Kaplan Lombardi restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. And we're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Good morning, Mark.
Morning, Francis.
How are you this morning?
Aces.
I was in New York City last evening.
You go to New York City?
Yeah. I was wandering around.
How'd you get there?
Drove, oddly.
You never drive to New York City.
Oh, no, wait. I didn't drive. That's right. We went with a friend, drove to Jersey City, and then we took the PATH train.
Mm-hmm.
And we were walking around, went to see a film, and we went to dinner. And I was struck by something I'm struck by every summer. Everyone loves al fresco dining.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a few tables on the sidewalk ourselves in New Brunswick. And al fresco dining, believe it or not, in New Brunswick, New Jersey, and for we know we have a lot of restaurant listeners and people listening across the country. New Brunswick, New Jersey is a great urban success story. In the late 60s and early 70s and the middle 70s and the late 70s, New Brunswick was a very distressed city.
Well, I tell people all the time that the block that our restaurant is on, I came to Rutgers in 1983. If you told me in 1983 that I was opening a restaurant on the block we're on, and the theater, the State Theater, which is one of the largest theaters in the state now and does all kinds of things from Bill Cosby to
Bruce Springsteen,
you name it, every type of program, was a porn theater two doors down from where our restaurant is right now. If you told me I was opening a restaurant on that block, I would say, get out of here, no way. I didn't even walk down that block.
Right, and he's a big guy.
Yeah.
But one of the ways that the enlightened leadership in New Brunswick used to turn the city around was they invested heavily in the arts, and Johnson & Johnson invested heavily in the city as well. They partnered with the private sector. But then they took it to the next step, and they made the jump from public to public sector driving private businesses, and New Brunswick became known as a restaurant town. And
mm-hmm.
one of the things the city did to maximize the impact on the street life of New Brunswick, which was at that time very challenging, and now two-bedroom apartments across the street from our restaurant go for $900,000.
Unbelievable. The penthouse is $1.6 million.
$900,000 for the not penthouse is one, two bedrooms.
Unbelievable.
One of the things the city wisely did back then, when you could live there for $200 a month, you know,
mm-hmm.
in above an old store, was they made it very easy for restaurants to have a street presence. If you were a full-service restaurant with at least 50 seats, you got to put tables out on the street for free.
Well, part of the reason is because it was a very old town with very wide sidewalks.
Yes.
That was one of the characteristics of New Brunswick.
And you had to leave a certain amount of footage wide so it wouldn't impede traffic and handicapped people could get by easily. But if you were, as so many restaurants were, able to do this, you could put tables on the sidewalk, which, what does that do? That keeps good people on the street, that keeps people watching on the street, that gives people a vested interest. You're not running a gauntlet to the restaurant door.
Mm-hmm.
There are people outside all night long, and that really, I think, was part of the sea change of street life in New Brunswick that made people feel confident investing.
Well, what happened is, and the theater turned around before most of the restaurants in town showed up, but the theater came back and kind of was making itself a presence, and then two other theaters opened next to it, George Street Playhouse and Crossroads Theater. And so that area kind of became a little bit of a theater row, but what happened? People would come, either valet park their car or park their car in one of the lots, and they would go from immediately come to town, go to the theater, and leave town.
Right.
And, you know, that was the whole thing. There was no before theater. There was no after theater.
And the city recognized that restaurants were going to turn that around. And some places in New Jersey use, and I think unwisely, they have restaurants within the theaters.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the Performing Arts Center in Newark is a special case, and they needed to do that. But, you know, the Paper Mill Playhouse, I mean, I'll lodge a criticism there. They have within the theater, they have a restaurant. So what does that do for the town exactly? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, and the restaurant is part of the theater, and so it's, you know, tax exempt, I think. I'm not sure about that, but I think it's...
Well, they can only operate on theater nights. It doesn't create the same kind of presence that a regular restaurant does.
But what New Brunswick did, which was much wiser, was they said, okay, the theaters are there, and we have these theaters, and they'll work with the local restaurants to build actual businesses.
And they have. There's no doubt about it. The theaters and the restaurants work very well together.
Anyway, so walking around the streets of New Brunswick, you see a lot of places have windows that open, French doors that open, tables on the street. And I was in Manhattan, which, of course, you have a very similar thing, as you have in Paris, as you have in Vienna, as you have in all these great cities around the world. But last night, it was oppressively hot. It was 80 degrees and humid. And there were restaurants that had the doors open. And I just, I think, my God, close the damn doors.
What about the people inside who are just begging for some air conditioning?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I think people certainly want a street presence, but close the damn doors and turn on the air conditioning. And I thought, I'm sweating out here like you wouldn't believe. I'm not going to go and sit
inside, there's no breeze. There's no air movement.
I'm not Spanish. I'm not French. I'm American. Give me the air conditioning. You know? And you know what we do?
I'm American. I want air conditioning, ice cubes, shower curtains. Okay, those are the three things that I demand.
So, but when you look at what we do now, our second floor restaurant, Catherine Lombardi. Now it's obviously a second floor, so the sidewalk presence would be a real drop off. You go out the window and you fall down a floor. But what we installed, we ripped out all the old windows. We have windows on two streets, and it's, you know, the windows are the centerpiece. It's like windows on New Brunswick. We ripped out the old windows and we put in windows that open, and that was very important to us. And a lot of people counseled us against that, and because they're harder to maintain, they're more expensive, they can break. But when we open the windows on a beautiful night, it connects you with the street. You hear the sounds of the city. And what I like is, on nights, very, very often you have a day when it's just too hot and we have the air conditioning on and the windows closed. But at 7 o'clock, things will change.
Once the sun goes down.
You'll get a little summer breeze, and then the maitre d' will walk around to the restaurant and open all 27 windows.
Yep.
And it just changes everything. It's like an event. But, you know, if it's oppressively hot, close the windows, close the doors. Give me my air conditioning.
Right. But what's happened from that? Okay, now you see the city turning around because it has a street presence. And just this past weekend, Star Ledger named New Brunswick the best restaurant town in New Jersey.
Right.
I mean, that's a big deal.
The Star Ledger, for those of you listening out of state, the North Star, formerly the North Star Ledger, is the largest circulation daily paper in the state of New Jersey, and it's a very respected and respectable paper. And they named New Brunswick, New Jersey. You know, there are other restaurants besides ours in this little town. And
not really worth going to. You probably want to just go to ours.
To our colleagues, Mark, is just kidding. There are plenty of great restaurants in New Brunswick. But if you look at just the exact opposite, if you look at how Newark tried to redevelop initially, they used the Gateway Center. Well, what was the Gateway Center? It was a hotel and restaurants and shopping connected to the train station, even though they were separate buildings, connected by walkway tunnels two stories above the street.
Right. So you could look down over Newark, but you never had to actually enter into Newark.
Right. You could take the train to Newark, get off the train, go to one office building, visit our attorneys, McCarter and English, our attorneys that are there in Gateway Center 1, go visit a restaurant in a different building, go stay at the hotel, get back on the train, go back home, and never once have set foot on the streets of the city of Newark. And New Brunswick took just exactly the opposite. And they said, listen, if you're going to come in our city, you want to develop our property, you're going to put people on our streets, and we're going to support the businesses that do. Which is, you know, I think a great way to turn a city around. See how great restaurants are? We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey 1450. The time is 11:15. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Lux and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. Our guest today is an expert on rum. His name is Ed Hamilton, and he's probably the premier expert on rum that we've ever come across. He's authored four books on the topic. Rums of the Eastern Caribbean is one of them. The Complete Guide to Rum is another. He spent the last 15 years cruising on his sloop, continuously gathering data on rum history and manufacturers. He's authored four books. We met him in New York recently at the Museum of the American Cocktail Party to celebrate the 200th anniversary of the American Cocktail, and he really gave us quite an education. We thought we knew what we were talking about, but... well, we don't.
Ed, welcome to the show.
Nice to be here.
Now, you have a kind of an obsession with rum. Why rum?
Well, I would call it a passion, not an obsession.
That's because you haven't met you, Ed.
All obsessed people call their obsessions passions, but I agree.
Yeah, and all my friends are characters except me.
So why rum? What so appeals to you about rum particularly among
all
the spirits?
I was on my sailboat in the Caribbean, and I'm sure you've heard when you're surrounded by lemons,
right?
Like lemonade.
Right, right.
I was surrounded by rum.
Mm-hmm.
Everywhere I went, there was rum. And living on a sailboat without a job, rum was a lot cheaper than beer.
Uh-huh.
And so it was the natural thing to do.
Now, why don't we tell people what rum really is? And, I mean, that's not as simple an answer as, I mean, in the very simplest level, rum is fermented from sugar. It's fermented from sugar and then distilled into a spirit. That's the basic definition of rum. But there are a lot of distinctions that are really important within that. Why don't we talk about some of them?
Okay. All rum is made from sugar cane. That's the definition according to our definition people in Washington, D.C. that decide all these things. And every distiller wants to talk to you about the quality of the sugar cane that goes into the rum. But most rums are made from molasses. Rum can also be made from sugarcane juice or sugarcane syrup. So given that broad definition, it will include things like cachaça from Brazil or molasses-based spirits. But it's also worth noting that most of the big distilleries, in addition to making rum from their molasses, they also make neutral spirits that they call vodka, or they flavor them and call gin, or they flavor them and call them whiskey, or all number of other things.
What makes so I'm distilling from sugarcane. When does it become a vodka rather than a rum?
Vodka is distilled to 95%. Rum, by the definition, is a spirit distilled from sugarcane, either molasses, sugarcane juice, or syrup, distilled to less than 95% alcohol.
Well, now, we talk about different rums. What is the difference in quality that makes? I mean, you talk specifically about rum agricole, which is a top level of rum. What makes a great rum a great rum?
Distillation, fermentation, and raw ingredients.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to have all three of those. Like in your restaurant, you can have the fresh caught fish right off the boat from the day boats, and you can throw it to a guy that just walked in that calls himself a chef, and he can make that into a terrible meal.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can take that same piece of fish and properly prepare it, cook it, don't overcook it, and you end up with something that you want to come back to your restaurant for. So to say that rum agricole is best or one rum is better than another, you really have to look at the whole process.
So is the sugar? Are there different grades of sugar cane, or is it all about who's making it?
There's all kinds of variables. The sugar going into it is one of the ingredients, but it has to be fermented and then distilled by someone that knows what's going on. And then you've got the aging and sometimes the flavoring process that goes into it as well. So it's really hard to make a generalization and say, well, you know, the best one comes from sugarcane juice, for example. I've tasted some rums that were made from sugarcane juice that I never want to put in my mouth again.
Well, now, but so that brings us to a major distinction you make. Some rums are made from sugarcane juice or sugarcane syrup, and other rums are made from molasses. Now, what's the difference between a rum made from molasses and a rum made from sugarcane juice or sugarcane syrup?
Okay, think of rum as a brandy, as a sugarcane brandy.
Mm-hmm.
It's made from good grapes. Brandies, the best brandies are made from good grapes. The best, if you talk to the cognac people, are made from only grapes grown in the cognac region and then distilled to a certain process. Imagine that rum is another kind of brandy, another kind of distilled spirit, and it's made from either sugarcane juice or molasses. To make brandy, you make a wine, and then you distill it.
Mm.
So imagine the difference between a sugarcane juice wine and a molasses wine.
Mm.
Which is going to make the better distilled spirit?
I think sugarcane juice wine will probably make the better distilled spirit, but it will probably be more expensive, no?
Yes, it will, but it also depends on the expertise of the person that's distilling it.
Mm-hmm. Now, molasses is a byproduct, basically, of the sugar-making process, right?
Right. When you extract sugar out of sugarcane juice, you crush the hard stalk. It's a tall grass, grows about 10 feet in the air. You crush that, you collect the juice, and then through a process of vacuum pans and centrifuge and things, you extract the crystalline sugar. In that extraction process, you concentrate everything else that was in the juice,
mm-hmm.
which includes sulfur, potassium, iron, other minerals that
good,
were in the soil.
Good and bad. You concentrate everything.
And
there's
more
juice.
Bad in molasses. Hey, you know, Ed, we're going to have to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment and talk more about this rather fascinating process of how rums really aren't all equal, and as rum becomes one of the trendiest spirits among quality drinkers or drinkers of quality spirits, this is stuff that you should probably know. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1125.
The place, Brooklyn, New York, post-World War II. An Italian-American woman named Catherine Lombardi cooks for her family. What's so special about that? Well, lots. Food was central back then. Good food handed down from the traditions of two countries. Food that filled the whole house with the sweet smells of garlic, tomato, and basil. No matter when you stopped by or who you were sure to be fed and fussed over. Catherine showed her love on the plate and out of the pot. Any who were lucky enough to receive it never forgot. This is Mark Pascal from the Restaurant Guys radio show and Stage Left. I've just opened Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, and its mission, to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. So come by the bar, sit by the fire. Have some fresh mozzarella and antipasto. The manicotti and tortelloni are amazing, and the veal chop will make you cry. Our wine list, of course, without parallel. We've got to live up to the standard set by Catherine Lombardi. You see, Catherine Lombardi was my grandmother. Come let me show you where I came from.
Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, 732-296-9463 or CatherineLombardi.com. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurant. Our guest today is Ed Hamilton, who is probably the premier rum expert that I know of anywhere. He's written several books on rum, and we were talking before about how some rum is made from molasses and some rum is made from sugarcane juice. And can we just continue on with that narrative of how the rum comes to be rum?
Sure. Once you start out with a wine, you take the raw ingredient that has some sugar in it, and you ferment it, turn it into a wine, and then you distill it. But one of the things that I found very fascinating was that the reason that rum is it's made from sugar, sucrose. Sugarcane is the most available source of sucrose that we have.
Mm-hmm.
When we make distilled spirits from grains, for example, we have to add enzymes and cook them and do all kinds of things to convert the glucose to sucrose before we can ferment it. When you take out those steps and you ferment the sucrose directly, you crush the cane juice, it'll start fermenting in the field.
So you have sucrose fermenting right away?
Right away.
And that's a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, it's a good thing if you have it in a controlled condition right away.
Uh-huh.
If you cut the cane and just lay out in the field for a couple of days, it's not real good. But you can solve that problem by making sugar out of it first, extract the sugar, end up with molasses, and then you distill everything out of it to like better than 90% alcohol, typically 94% alcohol. You've distilled everything out of it. Then you start out with essentially a neutral spirit. And then you...
I mean, we don't drink rum at 90% alcohol.
Right.
No, but then we just dilute it to 40% alcohol and put it in a bottle and call it rum.
Well, you know, it's very similar to the same problems faced by grape growers. When we talk about an estate bottled wine that's bottled on the estate, what they do is, if they pick those grapes and they don't go crush them right away, fermentation begins in the field in an uncontrolled way. And so that harvesting and then getting it into where you can make it into wine, same for rum as it is for making wine. You've got to be very careful that doesn't happen in an uncontrolled way. We'll be back after the news talking with Ed Hamilton about rum. The rums that are available in America today are better than have been available in many, many years, and if you don't know much about them, you should. You can do that by listening to us after the news. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1130.
Hello, everybody, and welcome. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcasts on iTunes.
Ed Hamilton is one of our favorite experts on spirits of any sort, and he is an expert on rum. He's written several books on the topic. He's written The Rums of the Eastern Caribbean and The Complete Guide to Rum. You can find out more about those books by logging on to our website, restaurantguysradio.com, but you can find it even more by just listening to the radio, so don't touch that dial.
Ed, we were talking before about rums made from sugarcane versus rums made from molasses. As a consumer, how do we know which is which? How do we know by sitting out, looking at the bottle on the shelf, which rum we should choose?
The only way that you can be guaranteed that it's rum made from sugarcane juice as opposed to sugarcane, which generally implies it's a molasses-based rum, is you have to find a bottle from the French Islands, and it'll say rum agricole. But that's not enough. Also look for the rums Appellation d'Origine Contrôlée. My French is horrible.
You did fine.
Look for AOC. Mm-hmm. Like the wines. You know, the better wines will have an AOC mark on them. There are other rums that are coming to the market that have all kinds of other designations that some of them don't even exist beyond the bottler's imagination.
You know, actually, you disabused me of some misinformation, and I was mad because I'm pretty good about truth and labeling, and I'm pretty savvy when it comes to most spirits. But I really, admittedly, didn't know much about rum, and I still don't, except that I'm reading your books now. But I had one of my favorite rums. It's of the mass produced variety of rum is Mount Gay rum, and Mount Gay and tonic in the summertime is something I enjoy drinking, and I've used it in a couple of cocktails in our recent restaurant. And the Mount Gay bottle says, and I looked at it, it says Mount Gay rum. Sugarcane rum, 8 years. What does that mean?
I think we're a little confused there. The Mount Gay sugarcane rum.
Yeah.
I don't think says aged 8 years on it.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't. I thought it said.
No. That's Bacardi eight.
Bacardi 8 years. You're right.
But don't let me dispel any of your.
Yeah.
Thoughts.
Yeah.
Let's start with the Mount Gay, and then we'll talk about the Bacardi.
Let's talk about truth in labeling, but about how labels can be misleading. What they can say one thing and mean another.
Well, the alcohol, now that's called the TTB, it used to be the ATF, but they got a makeover. They have certain regulations. To be called sugarcane rum, for example, isn't misleading at all. It's made from sugarcane. That product from Mount Gay is one of their better products. And although I like the sugarcane juice rums, there are many good molasses-based rums out there, and I drink a number of them, and they're on my list of favorite rums. The Mount Gay sugarcane rum is actually a molasses-based rum. In Barbados, they call it sugarcane brandy, but in the U.S., they can't call it brandy because it's rum. So even though it is a molasses-based rum, it's called sugarcane rum, and it is made from sugarcane. It's just not made from sugarcane juice.
Mm-hmm. And now, so the Mount Gay rum is a rum I happen to like, okay, and it's made from molasses as opposed to sugarcane juice. But there are some other troubling things on labels as far as rum goes. And actually, again, Ed, you brought this to my attention. The Bacardi 8 Años. Now, it says Bacardi 8 Años. 8 Años translated means 8 year, 8 year aged. Bacardi, can you tell me exactly what
that
means?
Well, it almost translates to that. Ocho años translates to 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't say aged 8 years. It just says 8 años.
Yeah.
So that in order to be an age statement, according to the TTB and the label Nazis in Washington, D.C., it has to say aged so many years. And the format is aged X years, where X is the number of years.
So,
yeah,
Bacardi 8 Años is not actually 8 years old.
No, and they don't even claim it to be.
Oh, so, I think it's a little misleading.
So what, is it made by an 8-year-old? I mean, come on.
It's a trade name.
Yeah, right. Well, I have
it's a trade name. My trade name is Greatest Radio Personality in the World.
And stick to it.
I will. All right, let's talk to us about another big difference in rums between the clear rums and the medium color rums and dark rums. What does that tell us about rum?
The color really doesn't tell you much unless you read the label and know a little bit more about the rum. For example, most white rums are aged at least some period of time if they're made from molasses. Because when you distill molasses, which is high in sulfur, you have to distill it to a very high proof. And even though you distill it to a high proof, if you just bottle it right out of the still, you end up with a bite in the finish. And that's undesirable. Mm-hmm. So most distillers will age it a certain period of time, and then they'll carbon filter it to remove the color and end up with a white rum. However, if the rum comes from the French Islands and says Rum Agricole and has AOC mark on it, then it is not aged at all. But mm-hmm. it's made from sugarcane juice wine mm-hmm. as opposed to molasses, so it doesn't have that sulfur bite.
And what about the dark rums, like the Myers dark rum? Where does that color come from?
From copious amounts of caramel coloring.
You know, I
caramel coloring, that would be the same stuff they put in Coca-Cola, right?
Yes, very similar.
Is there a way to make a rum that dark naturally?
Not really. It can be aged, and one of the other problems when you age spirits, typically the molasses-based rums come out of the still at more than 90% alcohol. They're aged at about 80% alcohol and used bourbon and whiskey barrels.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes out of the barrel, it's somewhere 75, 78% alcohol. When those rums are bottled, they're bottled at 40% alcohol. So you're diluting the alcohol. You're also diluting the color.
Well, let me throw out, because this is a process, the diluting of the alcohol is a process called rectification. And I will always remember that in France, whenever I went to visit a place where they were distilling brandy or Armagnac or Cognac, they were very concerned about rectifying the spirit very slowly, a little bit every day to bring that spirit down. And then I went to visit my friend Colonel Elmer T. Lee in Kentucky, in Frankfort, Kentucky, and we toured some bourbon distilleries, and they do their rectification like all in one. They just, if it's 80 proof and they want it to be 40 proof, they
half
just
water.
Throw in half water that day. What struck me, what the French say, is that you shouldn't rectify very quickly, because then you make the distillery smell good, but you're taking a lot of the smell out of the spirit. Whereas the Kentuckians are like, oh, just put the water in.
There's
there.
There's tons of smell in there already.
What do you think?
I think it needs to be done slowly, but it also depends on the water, which is one of the reasons that I feel it's very important to buy a distilled spirit that's bottled at the distillery,
mm-hmm.
where the people care. There you're going to get something that's been diluted or rectified with the real water, with the best water that they can find.
Mm-hmm.
In Kentucky, they're known for their water, and that's one of the reasons that make Kentucky bourbons and whiskey so good. If that spirit is being shipped in bulk to a third party, his whole goal in life is to get that high-proof spirit in one door, get it in bottles, and out the other door.
And you guys, any of our listeners have heard us say this 1,000 times. Water is an ingredient, okay? It's a very, very important ingredient. And again, I'll say it's an important ingredient in those New York City bagels. It's an important ingredient in the Kentucky bourbon. It's an important ingredient in the Italian pasta. It is a very, very important ingredient.
But I will tell you that I was at the distillery. I was at Ancient Age when they were rectifying. And throughout Kentucky, as far as I know, they don't rectify slowly in Kentucky. And one of the things they say that people who rectify slowly say is, when you put water into a spirit very quickly, you release a lot of the aromas. And one of the things that I've always been taught, and I always practice, is no matter how great the spirit, to drop in a little bit of ice or a little bit of water in your glass if you're drinking it straight really releases the mm-hmm. nose. Does that happen with rum? How should we drink rum?
Absolutely. Well, good rums you drink on the rocks, the old-aged rums.
Mm-hmm.
The younger rums I mix in with the French rums, I mix in a drink called a petite punch, with a little bit of sugarcane syrup and a little slice of lime to complement the rum, not to cover it up.
Mm-hmm.
There are other sugarcane juice spirits like cachaças, which I've tasted some very good ones. I've tasted others that I really don't care to drink. But when you make a caipirinha, universally you add a lot of sugar and a lot of lime. There's a reason for that.
We're going to give you the recipe for caipirinha when we come back. We'll be back in just a moment. Caipirinha is a drink. It's from Brazil, and it's made with a very particular kind of rum called cachaça. We know a lot of people that make it with regular rum, with other kinds of rum. But we'll give you the recipe for that on the air, and we'll put it up on our website in just a moment or later on today. Our guest is Ed Hamilton. He's an expert on rum. He's written several books on rum, and we'll be talking more with him about the topic in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey 1450. The time is 11:45.
Economy Paper and Restaurant Supply Company is the oldest dealership in New Jersey. They've been equipping and supplying restaurants since 1932, and they know that to make great food, you need great equipment. You need equipment that doesn't break down, and you can't pay too much for it. Whether you need an emergency replacement or a wholesale kitchen renovation, Economy's knowledge, experience, and integrity are indispensable. Economy Paper and Restaurant Supply is a recognized dealer for all major brands, and they specialize in custom fabrication and ventilation. At Economy, they've got all the tools you need to get the job done, all in one place, all priced right, and delivered to your door. Economy is the only dealer in New Jersey that's been approved for on-site demonstrations of the Rational Combi Oven. The Rational Combi Oven is an innovative combination of convection and adjustable steam oven. It's a powerful and versatile tool in your kitchen's arsenal. They also supply competitively priced paper products and all the non-food supplies every restaurant needs. You can visit the Economy Demo Kitchen on Broad Street in Clifton, New Jersey. You can also visit economysupply.com, then call them at 973-279-5500. That's 973-279-5500.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis. Our guest today is Ed Hamilton. He is an expert in rum. He's the founder of the Ministry of Rum, and he spent the last 15 years cruising on his sloop, continuously gathering data on rum history and manufacturers. It's a hell of a job, but somebody's got to do it.
Ed, a moment ago, we were talking about cachaça versus rum, and a nice gentleman brought me a cachaça from Rio de Janeiro. It almost had a green hue to it. Very, very interesting cachaça. But maybe you could tell us a little bit of the difference between these two products.
Rum and cachaça.
Well, in the U.S., cachaça is called rum. In Brazil, cachaça is called cachaça. And in order to be called rum, it has to have some component of a molasses-based spirit blended with it. Cachaça differs from the rums that we know, most of the other rums that we know, in that it is distilled to about 40-45% alcohol by volume,
mm-hmm.
which means that it has quite a bit of residual fusel oils and other things that weren't distilled out of it.
Mm-hmm.
There are somewhere over around 30,000 different people making cachaça in Brazil. So there's a lot of variation in the quality and how it's done.
We have seen a lot of variation. Some of the cachaças that are available in the American market
gasoline.
No, I'd rather actually gasoline's much better.
Yeah. Well, you were talking about a drink before called the caipirinha, and the caipirinha is the traditional drink of Brazil. And what you do with that is you basically take some sugar, some limes, about half a lime in the bottom of a Collins glass, and you just muddle the sugar and the limes all together. And it's important to use the whole limes because when you do that, you get the juice of the lime, but you also get a little bit of oil from the outside of the skin, and you get a little bitterness from the pith of the lime.
And cut your limes into wedges like you would hang them on the edge of a drink.
And you muddle that all together, and then traditionally you pour cachaça on top of that. And there's the drink, everybody. And
you got to shake it.
And you shake it like the Dickens, and so you get a lot of melt in there. And it's related to a daiquiri, actually. It's similar to a daiquiri. But if cachaça is a little rough for you, you can make that same drink with rum. I'll tell you, it's a very powerful drink, and it doesn't taste like it. So be very careful. So, Ed, what's your feeling on rum and cocktails overall?
I love rum and cocktails. What's not to love about rum and cocktails?
Nothing. But do you see people sometimes taking a rum that's really too good to make into a cocktail and making it into a cocktail?
Absolutely. I see people taking good rum and mixing it with a lot of really bad ingredients.
Mm-hmm.
And I meet people all the time, I'm sure you do too, that say, oh, we only use fresh ingredients and fresh juices and all this. And then they pour in some horrible rum in on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
Or worse yet, some flavored molasses-based rum that shouldn't even be called rum.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, one of the things that when we talk about cocktails all the time, I mean, sort of the pretender to the throne cocktail bars are all about vodka-based drinks. Vodka doesn't taste like anything, okay? And so when you make a cocktail out of vodka, it's for somebody who doesn't want to taste any liquor. And that's sort of a cocktail. It's a cocktail for someone who doesn't really like to drink liquor. And I guess that's one school of thought, but the real cocktailians, the Dale DeGroffs of the world, the Audrey Saunders of the world, the Gary Regans of the world, you make a drink with rum or gin or whiskey, And that becomes a component of the final flavor of the cocktail.
It's part of the character of the cocktail. It's not just for the alcohol. It is for the flavor that's in that.
In the summertime especially, we'll put a couple of rum cocktails up on our website. And you're looking for the flavor of the rum to be part of the flavor of that final cocktail. I mean, don't you find that to be the case, Ed?
Absolutely. And I feel very fortunate to have been able to be served by some great people all over the country. In the islands, I typically drank a couple of different cocktails. One is a tea punch, and I don't really remember what the other one was.
Well, now, you in the tea punch, you talk about sugarcane syrup, and you really gave us a revelation when we met at the Museum of the American Cocktail event. You said, oh, you've never had the true cane syrup? Because we use simple syrup in the restaurant all the time, which is simple syrup is just sugar water that if you really want to make great cocktails, you have to have behind your bar. But then you sent us some cane syrup. Tell us the difference about those two ingredients and how they might be used differently and what makes a cane syrup special.
Well, real cane syrup, when I started bringing rum agricole to the U.S. and drinking it here in the U.S., I was looking for a good cane syrup, and so I had everybody that I could find send me a bottle of their syrup because I really didn't want to import cane syrup. Nothing tasted like sugar cane. Everything that I found either tasted like nothing, like sugar water or molasses. The cane syrup that I sent you is made in Martinique by a traditional method. That's the way they do it. They start out with raw sugar cane sugar, and in the sugar making process there are many different grades of sugar. This is the first sugar that comes off, and basically it's the first stable sugar. When they reconstitute that with water and make it into a syrup, it's 68% sugar. Sugar is a preservative, and years ago they called it preserves. You took any kind of fruit or anything and put a lot of sugar with it, and it was a preserve. So what you have is 68% sugar. You can put it on the counter, leave the top off it. The fruit flies will come in, but it isn't going to ferment because it's got so much sugar in it.
And then you'll have preserved fruit flies if they get stuck in there.
Yes, and they're good and tasty, and it's protein and all that.
We'll not do that here, but thanks for the advice on that one.
We'll put the top on the bottle,
but it's good to know.
But it gives you, it adds a lot of flavor to the drink besides being sweetener, but it also doesn't dilute the drink because you only use a little bit.
Well,
I started doing tea punches in New York. Bartenders said, we've got to know how much.
Mm-hmm.
And so I poured some in a glass, and I said, that much. And then they couldn't pour it out of the glass to measure it.
Oh, because it was so thick.
Because it has a density, unlike...
We have to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment with rum expert Ed Hamilton. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:55. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. Our guest today is rum expert Ed Hamilton. He is the founder of the Ministry of Rum, which we'll link you to on our website at restaurantguysradio.com. He's author of several books on rum, which we'll also link you to. We were talking at the break about cocktails, and Ed has the very good fortune of being able to live his life on a sloop in the Caribbean, but we were talking about the state of the cocktail in the United States, and what's your perspective on rum and cocktails, Ed?
They're getting much better.
In America?
Right. Now when you ask for rum, the bartender doesn't automatically hand you rum and Coke, which is a good thing. And then
not giving you anything mixed with Coke is a good thing.
Right.
It's not really the real thing.
Well, then traveling around the country, I was introduced to all kinds of wonderful cocktails by people that took this all very seriously. And, of course, I've been to Audrey's place and the things that come out of her.
Audrey Saunders is the Pegu Club.
Right. Everything that comes across that bar is phenomenal.
Yeah.
But then I found other people in other bars like the Brandy Library. I was just blown away by the quality of the rum cocktails, now wherever I go, people say, "Well, Ed, try this."
We only have about a minute left, but can you tell us what at the Brandy Library? What's the cocktail that blew you away?
Bee's Kiss.
What's in a Bee's Kiss?
Bee's Kiss is cream, a little bit of honey, and it used to be made with white rum and dark rum. Now they're using an aged rum from Martinique, and then they dust it, they whip it all up, shake it with ice. Pour in a champagne glass and then dust it with freshly grated cinnamon.
Nice.
Wow.
What's the age rum from Martinique that they're using?
La Favorite Rum View.
Okay. We're going to go and have one of those for lunch. Ed, thanks for being on the show. It was great to have you talking about rum. Will you come back and talk with us about rum again?
Sure.
Super.
Thanks so much, Ed.
Ed Hamilton, you can find out more about him. You can find out the recipes for a Bee's Kiss. You can find out a couple of other rum cocktail recipes on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. Or you can come into Catherine Lombardi at our cocktail bar where we make a bunch of these. And just fascinating, fascinating topic. I hope that you've enjoyed listening to us this hour.
I love rum.
I do, you know, I do too. And this organization, the Ministry of Rum, I feel like we should have done two shows with it. I wish we had a two-hour show. Because this is actually pretty interesting stuff, and it's new to me. Because I know about a lot of kinds of spirits, and learning about rum is fairly new. But we'll have to leave that for another day. Hope you've enjoyed the hour listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.